folks, we have not advertised Close Reads, Philosophy with Mark and Wes, on this feed recently, so I wanted to blast you with a preview of the beginning of a series that Wes and I have been recording for the past 3 weeks on Close Reads, and I anticipate there will be at least 5 parts to it, maybe more. This is on Maurice Merleau-Ponty, a key continental philosophy phenomenology author that we covered a long time ago on Partially Examined Life, and as part of an episode from just a few years ago, but we definitely have owed him more systematic treatment. So this is where you'll get that. If you want to hear some less systematic treatment of Merleau-Ponty, he's also the subject of the Philosophy versus Improv live on stage episode recorded just a couple weeks ago that will be up on the Philosophy versus Improv feed next week. So go subscribe to Philosophy versus Improv if you haven't done that already. Now, before this series on Close Reads, we did a series on Heidegger on technology. We recorded supplements on our recent William James and Plotinus Partially Examined Life series. We recorded on Levinas, Descartes, Isaiah Berlin, Hegel. We've been doing this for well over a year now and are up to 64 recordings. There are 3 ways you can listen to Close Reads. First, just look up Close Reads on your favorite podcast app and you will find our fairly newly launched public feed through Evergreen Podcasts, which sports around half of our content, over 30 episodes to date, close to an hour each. So that is absolutely free. The homepage for that feed is closereadsphilosophy.com. The second way of listening to Close Reads is just to become a Partially Examined Life citizen, a supporter at the $5 level through our website, through Patreon, through Apple Podcasts, and you will get the first in each of our series. So you get a sampling of each of the 21 texts we have covered, including the entirety of what you are about to hear here. Thirdly, for the total Close Reads experience, everything we've recorded, everything we will record, and in video, as well as audio, if you prefer to stare at our faces while listening to this, then you want to support Close Reads through Patreon. That could be through patreon.com/closereadsphilosophy with a $5 monthly subscription. Or if you already support the Partially Examined Life through Patreon, just upgrade your membership there by $5, and there you go. And I should say, if you're one of the increasing number of people who listens to podcasts through Spotify, Patreon has a deal with Spotify, so you can use Spotify to get PEL and Close Read supporter material. All right, let's get to it. Here's this 10-minute preview to remind you who Maurice Merleau-Ponty is.
This is Close Reads,
a philosophy podcast with Mark and Wes.
I'm Wes Alwyn.
And I'm Mark Linsenmeyer. Let us talk about Maurice Merleau-Ponty's fat book, The Phenomenology of Perception. It was originally published in 1945. I am suggesting that we are jumping right to part one, past the initial 70-some pages of the introduction, talking about phenomenological method. Not that that wouldn't be interesting, but not 70 pages worth. Part one is called The Body, and that is what Merleau-Ponty is famous for. I know we didn't actually read this book together in our initial Merleau-Ponty episode. There was a racism and policing episode that you were not on that we read just section 3 of part 1, which we're starting at section 1 of part 1, or actually before section 1, the intro to part 1. Had you ever read any of this book before at all?
Well, in grad school, I guess. I mean,
yeah, I guess
I have it in my mind as having read this maybe in Kelly Oliver's class. You were in that class, right?
Yeah, some portion of it. I couldn't tell you what portion.
Yeah.
I thought I had chosen the sort of intro summary text that we read on PEL together because that's what we read in something. Maybe that was in my undergrad rather than my grad, but I definitely had this book on my shelf.
Yeah, I don't remember. It might as well be new.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of these insights are going to have been in Heidegger that, you know, Heidegger was all about we're being in the world. You couldn't possibly be skeptical about whether the external world exists. You can't even think about yourself without thinking about the world, contra Descartes. And I guess we want to see what additionally this extended focus on the body, you know, if we actually were to get through it, it's over 100 pages. I'm sure we're just going to try out a few sections here. I'm not sure if this is exactly the best place to start. I recall that this book moves extremely slowly in terms of ideas per page, but let's give it a shot.
All right.
So this is page 77, PDF page 102, Experience and Objective Thought, The Problem of the Body, the intro to part one, The Body.
Okay. Our perception ends in objects, and the object once constituted appears as the reason for all the experiences of it which we have had or could have had. For example, I see the next door house from a certain angle, but it could be seen differently from the right bank of the Seine, or from the inside, or again from an airplane. The house itself is none of these appearances. It is, as Leibniz said, the geometrized projection of these perspectives, and of all possible perspectives. That is, the perspectiveless position from which all can be derived. The house seen from nowhere. Take that, Rorty. But what do these words mean? Is not to see always to see from somewhere? To say that the house itself is seen from nowhere is surely to say that it is invisible. Yet when I say that I see the house with my own eyes, I am saying something that cannot be challenged. I do not mean that my retina and crystalline lens, my eye, which is something only French people have. I've never heard of that anatomy. My eyes as material organs go into action and cause me to see it. With only myself to consult, I can know nothing about this. I'm trying to express in this way a certain manner of approaching the object, the gaze in short, which is as indubitable as my own thought, as directly known by me. We must try to understand how vision can be brought into being from somewhere without being enclosed in its perspective. All right, that's a good, I like that. Good start.
Husserl had put this just by saying that, and I think Husserl is sort of the more immediate influence on Merleau-Ponty. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how much Heidegger he read, whether he's sort of a parallel thread to Heidegger. It would be very surprising if he didn't read quite a bit. But yeah, so Husserl describes objects, physical objects in the world, like the house, as transcendental. That is, any particular aspect of it, we know that there are more aspects of it to see. There are indefinitely many. There are infinitely many, probably. And so the house as a whole, is it the bundle of all those possible aspects? It's something that, I mean, I guess we haven't really said exactly what it is. Is it a theoretical entity, as Quine says? Are we positing it, you know, that there is something over and above all the actual and possible appearances of it? But certainly, since this is all about describing our perception, we really think of ourselves as seeing the object and not as our eyes as seeing the object. We don't know anything about the physiology of the eyes until we, you know, get out of the natural standpoint, get out of the default perceptual standpoint and do some science. So when we're just a phenomenology, right, this is the position. The primacy of perception was how it was put in the other book that we read by Merleau-Ponty, that we're in the Cartesian contemplating the contents of my consciousness position by default. And so what is just describing, what is the essence of the house, the object? Well, it is whatever it is that binds all those different possible perceptions together. It strikes us as something that is directly causing our perceptions of it and that is the object.
Yeah. So I like the idea that this perspectiveless position is derived as if it's something mathematical. You take all the data points and then you find the equation of the curve that runs through all of them. And that's your abstract object in a sense. But I think the philosopher, Thomas Reed, who will be reading soon on PEL, says something like each one of these appearances is really a signifier in a sense. We don't see the appearance that our perspectival limited appearance on the object, right? The front of the box, while all the other angles are missing. We don't see that particular appearance as such, as just a trapezoid or whatever it looks like if you take it literally, right? We do perspectival stuff. Right, we don't even see the trapezoidal shape from an angle as trapezoidal. We see it as rectangular. Right, so the raw perception is a signifier for what lies beyond it, the imagined three-dimensional object, which we can only understand as three-dimensional through a temporal sequence of going around it, handling it in our hands, and so on and so forth. So that's the basic part. And of course, it's, as you said, you know, it's not new to Merleau-Ponty. This is taken from Husserl, and it's arguably there and as early as, you know, someone like Reed, who was responding to Hume.
Well, and Leibniz, right? I guess it's before Reed, probably.
Leibniz and maybe Hume himself, wouldn't be surprising. But, you know, maybe all the early empiricists, I guess, since they're doing simple ideas and the sequences of ideas, they've probably cashed this out in one way or another. So the gaze, a certain manner of approaching the object, the gaze.
Right. This is going to be, I think, a big technical term.
Yeah. So that's why I'm pausing there.
How we must understand how vision can be brought into being from somewhere without being enclosed in its perspective. So I'm not sure how much being is not capitalized here or anything.
That's a great line, by the way. Yeah. So how do we get this view from nowhere that we have derived from our particular perspectival positions that we're always in? But he's trying to express a manner of approaching the object, the gaze, which is directly known to me. So this is like supposed to be a Cartesian moment, right?
I think so. Right. So it can't be, I don't think, talking about a signifier the way you were just like Reed does is halfway to talking about, actually, it's just propositional, which you mentioned Rorty, and that's Rorty's view, is that there is no special acquaintance mm-hmm. relationship, which it sounds like what Merleau-Ponty is talking about by the gaze. It's that we see that some property is instantiated, is connected with some, basically another property, because we don't see substances directly. So we see, you know, when I see the house, I see that, well, this shape is really just, okay, that piece of wood has a relation to that piece of wood, which has a relation to this other box-like thing behind it, and however I'm describing it, and all we see are just a bunch of relations, which we could then turn into propositions, that there's nothing special about our immediate qualia of them, as far as knowledge goes, at least, you know, because we are always seeing through some theoretical framework. So not that Rorty, I don't want to cannibalize a Rorty episode from next Sunday, but not that Rorty believes that there are equally good alternate conceptual schemes that you could describe. You know, I could describe this house as in terms of the shapes of the blocks, or I could describe it in a completely different way. No, there actually is, given what kinds of creatures we are, pretty much one way that we're going to get to the notion of a house. And there's nothing controversial about that, but it is not from acquaintance, from perception, and then somehow abstracting out to facts. We just actually perceive in terms of propositions or facts. Is that what you understand Reed is getting at? That we, you know, that this
I'm not sure. I'm not sure yet.
Okay, so we'll
but,
see.
But I mean, he is using the word derived, which suggests something non-immediate, mm-hmm. a non-immediate perspectivalist position. But I think, yeah, I mean, as you're pointing out, it does sound he wants to say that something immediate and as immediately knowable and incorrigible as the I, and I think, therefore, I am, if I'm not mistaken. So in other words, this I would be this intentional object is what I would call it, and I would say it's something abstract, right? Because it's not, it is and it isn't encountered in immediate acquaintance, and mm-hmm. I guess is the way to put it. It isn't in the sense that we don't, that's not what the raw data of experience is, right? We just get the perspective. But on the other hand, there's an immediacy to our grasp of the whole object. And maybe that's an argument for the Cartesian point of view, if we thought it were constructed like Kant, right, as an appearance. If it's constructed by us as an appearance, as Kant would have it, then that's the best form of immediacy one can get. And that's why Kant was attracted to it. But anyway, I guess we'll figure it out as we go along.
Thanks for listening to this preview. You can hear the full recording at absolutely no cost to you by going to the Close Reads Philosophy with Mark and Wes feed, closereadsphilosophy.com. You can also hear the whole thing if you become a Partially Examined Life supporter at partiallyexaminedlife.com/support. Finally, if you want to hear parts 2 and 3 and all the other parts that we're going to record of this, you need to support Close Reads directly at patreon.com/closereadsphilosophy.